సుప్రభాతం. సుప్రభాతం. యోగ సూత్ర పరిచయ సత్రస్య ఇదం ఇయం చతుర్థి కక్ష్య. దిస్ ఇస్ ద ఫోర్త్ క్లాస్ ఇన్ ద కోర్స్ యోగ సూత్ర పరిచయ. టుడే ఇస్ ఎ స్పెషల్ డే, కృష్ణ జన్మాష్టమి. ద బర్త్ డే ఆఫ్ యోగేశ్వర శ్రీకృష్ణ. సో లెట్ అస్ రిమెంబర్ హిమ్ ఇన్ దిస్ ఆస్పీషియస్ డే అండ్ వి విల్ స్టార్ట్ దిస్ టుడేస్ క్లాస్ విత్ ద మంగళ శ్లోక. యోగేన చిత్తస్య పదేన వాచాం మలం శరీరస్య చ వైద్యకేన యోపాకరోత్తం ప్రవరం మునీనాం పతంజలిం ప్రాంజలిరానతోస్మి. Now, let us review the previous class. In the previous class, we discussed three aspects. One is the arrangement of chapters, Samadhipada. There are four chapters, Samadhipada, Sadhanapada, Vibhutipada and Kaivalyapada of the Yoga Sutra of Patanjali. And we also discussed that the number of sutras comes around, the total number of sutras in these four padas is 195 according to Vyasa. And of course there are variations in the number of sutras. Some say they are 194 and the sutra sankhya is also sometimes 196 according to various commentators. The way in which the sutras are split, that is the major cause of the difference in number of sutras in each of the commentaries. And we also saw the very brief content summary of each of those chapters, each of the four chapters. The Samadhipada, as the very name goes, is about the goal of yoga, that is Samadhi. The absorption of the mind. To put it in general words, the absorption of the mind into the object of meditation, the object chosen for focus, and that is the major content of Samadhipada. And in Sadhanapada, as the very name indicates, it is about the tools and methods to attain that objective, Samadhi. There you find many tools like Kriya Yoga, Ashtanga Yoga and other very important and popular aspects of yoga are discussed in the Sadhanapada. The Vibhutipada is the various kinds of powers that a yogi acquires by the practice of specific yogic techniques. So that is the major aspect that is presented in the Vibhutipada. And finally, in the Kaivalyapada, the concept of Kaivalya, the final state, that is, even after reaching Samadhi, how a person finally moves into the state of liberation, or the state where the Purusha is established in his true self. That is, the Purusha becomes free from the association of the Prakriti, the spirit or the Atma, becoming free from the influences of Prakriti, that is Kaivalya, according to the yoga tradition, according to the Yoga Sutra, that is discussed, and a few concepts which refute the Bauddha ideas on the reality, on whether the world outside is real or it is merely a flux, and all such ideas are discussed in the fourth chapter. Of course, vasanas and some other such technical terms are also accorded treatment in the fourth chapter. And finally, we started discussing the first chapter, that is the Samadhipada, in a bit more elaborate way, where we focused on the first four sutras. So I mentioned in the previous class that the first four sutras of the Brahma Sutras of Badarayana Vyasa, they are considered together as Chatusutri, and they are given a lot of importance by almost all the commentators like Ramanuja, Shankara and various other commentators, and they focus upon these four sutras to bring out the essence of Vedanta. So this is a small attempt by me to club the first four sutras of the Yoga Sutra to represent the entire essence of the Yoga Sutras. So the first sutra is Atha Yoga Anushasanam. It introduces the subject, and the subject is Yoga Anushasanam. The discussion on yoga in accordance to the tradition handed down. So where does the tradition begin from? According to various sub-commentaries of Vyasa's commentary, it is Hiranyagarbha, the creator, the Chaturmukha Brahma, who is the one who initiated this tradition of yoga. So they further depend upon the Mahabharata reference, Hiranyagarbho Yogasya Vakta Nanyas Puratanaha, to state that Hiranyagarbha is the Arambha Purusha, the one who started this tradition of yoga. So according to Hiranyagarbha, this discussion on yoga or this shastra on yoga is begun. So that is presented in the first sutra, and then the second sutra is Yogaha Chitta Vritti Nirodhaha. Yoga is the Nirodha of the Chitta Vrittis. So there are two terms, Nirodha and Chitta Vritti. Chitta Vritti is the actions of the mind, the activities of the mind. Chitta Vritti, to be simply put, is the activities of the mind, and Nirodha is initially restriction and finally cessation of those activities of the mind. So efforts to restrict the activities of the mind and efforts to achieve cessation of the activities of the mind gradually, finally, is Chitta Vritti Nirodha. So that is yoga. According to the second sutra, Yogaha Chitta Vritti Nirodha. So the third sutra says, when one achieves this Chitta Vritti Nirodha, that is the cessation of the activities of the mind, when one achieves the cessation of the activities of the mind, then what happens? Then what happens is Drashtuhu Swarupe Avasthanam Drashta. Drashta is again a term which is used in Yoga Sutra repeatedly to indicate Purusha, the Atma. So it is, according to the yoga literature, the entire world is divided into two, the subject and the object, or the seer and the seen. Drashta Drishyam. Purushaha is Drashta, and Prakriti and all its modifications are called as Drishyam. So the Purusha, it is said that he watches the mind. Purusha does not see the entire world outside. The Atma does not see the world outside, but it sees the activities of the mind as reflected by the mind. Again, there are a lot of discussion in the commentary literature whether the Purusha really sees, or whether it is the reflection of Purusha on the Prakriti, which is stated as Purusha being the seer. There are many technical discussions on that. So if Purusha is accepted as the real seer, then Purusha sometimes will be the seer and sometimes will not be the seer, will not see. So this amounts to stating that there are changes or modifications in Purusha himself, and hence the commentators state that the seership which is attributed to Purusha is nothing but the reflection of Purusha on the Buddhi or the Chitta. So let us stop elaboration on this point here. I just introduced the technicalities, technical discussion in the Yoga Sutra about the Purusha. So, Drashta, the seer, or the Purusha, or the consciousness, becomes established in its true nature when Chitta Vritti Nirodha happens. As long as there is the activity of the mind in the vicinity of Purusha, the Purusha perceives a distorted reflection of his own nature. Whereas, when the mind attains Nirodha, cessation of its activity, then the undistorted Purusha, the form of Purusha is not distorted, and Purusha remains in his true nature. So, this is Drashtuhu Swarupe Avasthanam, Swarupe Avasthitihi. This is the third sutra among the Chatusutri. And finally, Vritti Sarupyam Itaratra. So when Chitta Vritti Nirodha is not achieved, by the practice of yoga, chitta vritti nirodha is achieved. In other context, when chitta vritti nirodha is not there, what happens is vritti sarupyam purushaha vritti sarupyam bhajate. Purushaha atma, he experiences identity with the vrittis. He feels oneness with the very multiple modifications of the mind. In the sense, he identifies himself with the various modifications of the mind. So these four sutras in essence state that chitta vritti nirodha is the goal to be achieved, is the direction or in which one has to move in the path of yoga, and by chitta vritti nirodha purusha is established in his pure form. When there is no chitta vritti nirodha, purusha follows the activities of the mind and gets deceived or immersed with the activities of the mind and loses the true, as if loses his true form. That is, in a sense, he does not lose, but it is as if that his true form is distorted. So that is vritti sarupyam. So these very fundamental ideas are brought out by the Chatussutri. So in the later portion of the Yoga Sutra, what happens is that all tools, all methods, all steps that are required to achieve chitta vritti nirodha is described. And after attainment of chitta vritti nirodha, how to move further to achieve the ultimate goal of kaivalya, that is discussed. And then what happens, what are all the difficulties, what are all the afflictions, what are all the sufferings that the purusha, not really the purusha who is in association with the mind, undergoes when he identifies or he follows the activities of the mind. So all these aspects are elaborated in the rest of the Yoga Sutras, and hence it is very important that the ideas that are presented in Chatussutri or of the Yoga Sutras are internalized. So this is about the review of the first class. So now we will move into today's portion. You would remember that we had divided each of the chapters of the Yoga Sutra into meaningful units or clusters of ideas. So the first unit of the first chapter we have discussed just now, which is Chatussutri, and there are 6 units according to me in the first chapter. And the second unit, now we will move into the discussion of the second unit. And in this second unit, as the title reads, Vrittayaha Tan Nirodha Upayaha. So they are discussed. So we saw in the Chatussutri itself that the term vritti was mentioned, yogaha chitta vritti nirodha. And then in the fourth sutra, vritti sarupyam itaratra. So the term vritti was mentioned, and now the term vritti is elaborated in this section. So, what are vrittis and what is their nature and what are all the classifications? How can we classify the vrittis? That is discussed here. And our task is to transcend the vrittis, to restrict the vrittis and finally attain cessation of the vrittis. So, anyone in the path of yoga has to understand what vrittis are, but the goal is, it is to understand the vrittis to attain better control over them. The goal is of understanding the chitta vrittis is to know their functioning and then control them accordingly. So that is the purpose of the classification of vrittis. The discussion on vrittis. So that is one aspect, and the second aspect in the second unit is tannirodha pradhana upayaha. The entire Yoga Sutra is all about giving ways and means to control the chitta vrittis. But the two important upayas are the methods that Patanjali presents as the very first tools to restrict or to gain cessation of the chitta vrittis. That is presented in the second unit. Now let us move into this unit. So the range of sutras for these two concepts in the first chapter is from the 4th sutra to the 16th sutra. Now, as I would like to remind that my counting of the sutras or the numbering of the sutras that I have mentioned here is based on one Vyasa Bhashya, according to the Vyasa Bhashya. And I have an edition which was published by the Chaukamba in the year 1938 and which was subsequently reprinted. So this sutra calculation or this sutra numbering follows Vyasa Bhashya. So sutras 4 to the sutra 16, they discuss about vrittayaha and tan nirodha upayaha. So from actually, it should be Sutra 5 to Sutra 16, because Chatus Sutri we have seen and this is the 5th Sutra. So, it begins from the 5th Sutra. There is a typographical error there. So, the 5th Sutra to the 11th Sutra discusses and classifies the vrittis. So, the 5th Sutra, it says, Vrittaya panchatayaha klishta klishtaha. The vrittis are of 5 types. Panchatayaha. The 5 types will be elaborated in the subsequent sutra. But more than the 5-fold classification, the 2-fold classification is also mentioned in the sutra. Klishta aklishtaha. So, vrittis are of 5 types and all those 5 types fall either into the group klishtaha or aklishtaha. So, klishtaha, this is a technical term in klesha, klishta, aklishta are all technical terms in Yoga Sutra. And it should not be understood in the general sense in which it is used in Sanskrita. Klishta in general Sanskritam is complex or complicated. That is the general understanding of the term klishta, and aklishta means easy. So difficult and easy. This is not the meaning of the term Klishta and Aklishta, which is used in the Yoga Sutras. So we say Naiva Klishta Nacha Katina. There is a song about in Sanskrit about Sanskritam. The language Sanskrita is Naiva Klishta. It is not complex. It is not difficult. So that is the general sense of the term Klishta and Aklishta. In Yoga Sutra, there is a lot of discussion on what is called as Kleshas. There are five aspects like Avidya, Asmita, Raga, Dvesha, Abhinivesha. They are called as Kleshas. When we go into the fifth chapter, we will discuss in detail about the Kleshas and those Chitta Vrittis which are influenced by these Kleshas. Kleshas are those factors which induce suffering. This is again the general understanding of the term Klesha. We will go into the detail in the second chapter. So Klesha, factors that cause suffering, that is Klesha. And those Chitta Vrittis which are influenced by these Kleshas are called as Klishta Vrittis. And those Vrittis which are influenced, favorably influenced by the practice of yoga, are Aklishta Vrittis. Some commentators say Klishta Vrittis are the Vrittis which are influenced by Rajas and Tamas. Aklishta Vrittis are Sattvika Vrittis. So the effort or the practice of yoga is to initially increase the Aklishta Vrittis. So in the normal state of the mind, an uninitiated person, a person who is not initiated in the path of yoga, will have by default Klishta Vrittis. All the activities of the mind will be influenced by Raga, Dvesha, Avidya and other things. So his mind will be full of Klishta Vrittis, and gradually when a person is initiated into yoga, Sattvika Vrittis or Aklishta Vrittis start growing, and one has to ensure that the Aklishta Vrittis multiply manifold and the Klishta Vrittis come down. So this is why these two terms, Klishta and Aklishta, are given right in the very first sutra, which tries to classify the modifications of the mind. So these vrittis, which are either Klishta or Aklishta, is further divided into five types: Pramana, Viparyaya, Vikalpa, Nidra, Smritihi. So Pramana is the right knowledge, the correct knowledge. So according to Yoga Sutra, the correct knowledge, authentic knowledge, comes from Pratyaksha, Anumana and Agama. Pratyaksha is the perception through one's own sense organs, all the Jnanendriyas. So through the Jnanendriyas, through the eyes, through the ears, through taste, through touch, so all these. So knowledge that arises due to direct perception through the senses is Pratyaksha, Anumana, inferential knowledge, and Agama is again the knowledge that is gained through a trustworthy source. So that is Pratyaksha, Anumana and Agama. The Pramana Shastra discussion in Yoga Sutra is restricted only to this much. That's all. So in one sutra, the epistemology of yoga ends. So by presenting the three pramanas, the epistemology aspect ends. Yoga Sutra is all about the prameya, the goal of yoga. And the pramana is given only this much importance. So, authentic knowledge, that is pramana, the first kind of vritti. And then viparyaya. Viparyaya is wrong knowledge. Viparyayo mithya jnanam atadrupa pratishtam. Grasping a thing as it is not, understanding a thing wrongly. The example of seeing silver in a shell, shuktikayam rajatajnanam. So that is viparyaya, wrong knowledge due to various causes. That is viparyaya. And then vikalpa. Vikalpa is a very interesting and original contribution of yoga. Vikalpa is the vritti. It's an imagination. Vikalpa simply means imagination. Shabda jnana anupati vastu shunyaha vikalpaha. Other systems of philosophy also discuss this idea, but the terminology vikalpa is unique to Yoga Sutra. So, shabda jnana anupati, a thing that exists only in words and no corresponding object is there, that becomes imagination. For example, Shashashringaha is one example. The horn of the hare, rabbit, rabbit's horn. Horn exists, rabbit exists separately, but a rabbit's horn does not exist. So these are only words. Rabbit's horn is just a word which does not have a correspondence in the object in the world outside. Rahoho shiraha is also the same of the same type, in the sense the head of Rahu, Rahu's head. When Rahu himself is head, then how can we say there is a head of Rahu? So then that is only that is vikalpa. Though usage of words exist, but the corresponding objects do not exist. So imagination. And Yoga Sutra, in Vyasa's commentary, this vikalpa is divided into two. The vikalpa during the waking state and vikalpa during the state of sleep. The vikalpa during waking state is the cause of, it has both positive and negative aspects. In the sense, the one who has the capacity to imagine, he becomes very creative. He can think of newer things. And the vikalpa is used in some yoga practices also. Bhavana is visualizing certain things. Though it might not exist outside, but we visualize it in our heart or in our mind. So visualization is a very powerful yoga practice which stems from vikalpa. For example, even a normal act of meditation, for example, we see the form of Lord Krishna and then meditate that, it might be in a picture or in a vigraha. So it is the vigraha or the picture is not Krishna in reality, but still we visualize that as Lord Krishna. So this kind of visualization is also a kind of vikalpa, which in a way becomes a tool to focus the mind. Hence, vikalpa has positive aspects also. And in the waking state, so yoga uses vikalpa to help the mind focus. And vikalpa in the sleep state or the dream state is there, and that dream, the swapna itself is a vikalpa. So, in a sense, in the swapna, we have many vikalpas, many imaginary thoughts, elephant with 10 legs and all those things. So the dream state is a vikalpa, and in the waking state also we have vikalpa. So that is one interesting idea that we have from Vyasa's commentary. So this is vikalpa, and then nidra. So nidra, two important things about nidra is that this nidra refers to the deep sleep state, that is sushupti. As dream has been included in viparyaya, this nidra does not indicate or include the dream state, and nidra here refers to the deep sleep state. That is point number one. And point number two is nidra is also a chitta vritti. As we are now discussing the classification of vrittis, nidra is also classified as the activity of the mind. Whereas in Vedanta and other systems, nidra is a state where the mind ceases to function. Whereas in yoga, nidra is considered as a chitta vritti. Abhava pratyayalambana vrittihi nidra. Nidra is a vritti that has its object. So every vritti has to have some object. When I see a book, so a chitta vritti in the form of a book appears in the mind. And similarly, what is the object of the chitta vritti nidra? Abhavaha. Abhava, which is caused by tamas. Abhava pratyaya. So tamas, which causes the absence of jagrat and swapna state, that is the waking and the dream state. So tamas, which causes the absence of the waking, so waking and the dream state, becomes the object of the nidra vritti. So nidra also is an activity of the mind. Why does Yoga Sutra state this? Because after a very deep sleep, we say sukhamaham aswapsam. I had a very good sleep. Nakinchid avedisham. I did not know anything. So we have such a recollection of a deep sleep, which means, again, so those, the memory, so this is a memory of our deep sleep. I slept well, I did not know anything, is a memory of the deep sleep. If memory has to exist, thought should have existed. So in all our activities of the day, we see that whichever thought exists, it reappears as memory at a later state. So, as we have a memory of a good sleep, hence sleep should have been a thought, which is abhava pratyaya. So, this is an unique aspect of yoga. And yoga says, when we see here that all these chitta vrittis are to be restricted, all these chitta vrittis in the final, towards the goal of yoga, all these chitta vrittis has to cease. Hence, one has to overcome this nidra vritti also. Not immediately, not when one starting, not when a person is just starting the practice of yoga. It doesn't mean that a yoga practitioner should not sleep. Elsewhere in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna states, Yukta Ahara Viharasya, Yukta Cheshtasya Karmasu, Yukta Swapnava Bodhasya. Appropriate amount of sleep and waking up at the right time. That is essential. So, a practitioner who is in the steps towards progressing in the path of yoga, for him he requires adequate amount of sleep and rest. But ultimately, as sleep also is a modification of the mind, an activity of the mind, it should also be overcome. It should also be restricted. All of us are expected to become gudakeshas. You might know that there is a term gudakesha which describes Arjuna in Bhagavad Gita. Gudakayaha ishaha. Gudaka, sleep. The one who has conquered sleep, Arjuna is said to be one such person. So, indeed, he is a yogi. Okay, let's now move on. We have spent enough time on sleep. And smriti. Smriti is recollection, memory. So, these are the five types of vrittis. Pramana, right knowledge. Viparyaya, wrong knowledge. Vikalpa, imaginary activity. The imaginary knowledge. And then nidra, the knowledge which has abhava or absence as the object, and smriti is memory. So these are the five classifications of the chitta vrittis, and each of this is klishta and aklishta. Each of this may cause suffering, or when influenced by yoga, each of these may also be favorable. Now take, for example, the state of nidra. When the mind is agitated and when the sleep becomes nidra, becomes klishta nidra. Dukkhamaham aswapsam. Vyasa in his commentary describes how klishta nidra happens. Dukkhamaham aswapsam. I didn't have a very good sleep. Styanam me chittam. My mind seems to be inactive and is not very settled. So all those experiences are there even in nidra. So when such experience is there in nidra, it becomes klishta nidra. And when one says sukhamaham aswapsam, I slept really well, and nakinchida vedisham, I did not know anything, then this is an indication of aklishta nidra. So in this way, each of these vrittis are of two types, klishta and aklishta. And these points I have mentioned. Kleshas, again, I just reminded, klishta and aklishta is to be understood as technical terms derived from klesha, which is discussed in Pada 2, and there is no further discussion on the epistemological aspects in the Yoga Sutra beyond classifying the Pramana Vritti as Pratyaksha, Anumana and Agama. So that is the one aspect, the first aspect of the second unit of the first Pada. So these are the Vrittis, the Nirodha of which we are about to start. The methods of its Nirodha is to be commenced henceforth. So the second unit presents the two important upayas for Chitta Vritti Nirodha. The two important upayas are Abhyasa and Vairagya. From Sutra 12 to Sutra 16, we have a discussion on what Abhyasa is and what Vairagya is. Abhyasaha, these two methods, Abhyasa and Vairagya, are closer to the heart of even Lord Krishna. He says, Abhyasena tu Kaunteya, Vairagyena cha Grihyate, Asamshayam Mahabaho, Mano Durnigraham Chalam. Abhyasena tu Kaunteya, Vairagyena cha Grihyate. O son of Kunti, it is true that the mind is fickle, the mind is restless, and it is difficult, it is not very easy to control it, but Abhyasena, by practice and by Vairagya, by detachment, it is possible. So these are the two tools which are preferred even by Lord Krishna. So Abhyasa and Vairagya. And again, Abhyasa cannot be simply translated as practice. Yoga Sutras have a specific idea as to what Abhyasa is. Tatra sthitau yatnaha abhyasaha. Sthitau yatnaha, sthiti, the mind, the ability to, or the effort, yatnaha is effort, the effort to retain the calm state of mind is Abhyasa. The ability to maintain the calm or distractionless state of mind is Abhyasa. As you can see that this is for a yogi who has already attained, the capacity to calm down his mind, who has already attained the capacity to rein his chitta vrittis, to bring the mind to such a state where the mind is not bothered by the kleshas. So these are two advanced tools. As we can see from the definition of Abhyasa itself, Abhyasa is all the efforts to retain the stable state of the mind. That is Abhyasa. And Vairagya is Drishtanushravika Vishaya Vitrishnasya Vashikara Samjna Vairagyam. Vairagya, of course, is detachment. Detachment from what? From Drishta and Anushravika. In objects which we see in this world, in this worldly life. So, withdrawal of attachment from the world, the objects of the world that are outside, that is one aspect of Vairagya. The other aspect of Vairagya is Anushravika Vishaya Vitrishna. Detachment, lack of thirst to attain those objects which are prescribed, which are attained by following the prescriptions of the Vedas. Anushravika Shruti. So the Vedas, as you might know, that we have Nitya Karmas in the Vedas, the Naimittika Karmas are also prescribed in the Vedas, and there are also Kamya Karmas, those karmas which will yield various worldly and heavenly results. So one may attain the Swargavasa. All those things are possible. So detachment from those aspects which come through the Vedas, attainment of heaven, and all those things. Swarga, swarga sukham and all those things. So, laukika sukham and swarga sukham. The comfort of this world and the comfort that one attains in the heaven. Detachment from both of this. That is vairagya. And that vairagya is called as vashikara. Vashikara is absolute control over the mind. So, when one excels in vairagya, if the highest point, when the highest point in vairagya is achieved, that is the ability to withdraw the mind, detach the mind from all the objects are achieved, then it is called as vashikara samjna. And this vairagya in Yoga Sutra is itself, in the Yoga Sutras itself, is classified into two, paravairagya and aparavairagya. Aparavairagya is the lower vairagya, detachment from objects of this world and the heavenly benefits, the swarga, sukha, all those things. When the highest point of that is reached, that is still aparavairagya. Then what is paravairagya? The highest vairagya? Paravairagya is detaching oneself from the activities of the three gunas even. That is paravairagya. Tat param purushakhyatehe guna vaitrishnyam. So, identifying the activities of the gunas and detaching oneself from those, that becomes paravairagya. Okay, one might have a question in the mind as to what is, why is there this classification of paravairagya and aparavairagya. We will be discussing in the course that the samadhi is of two types, sampragnata samadhi and asampragnata samadhi. We have even discussed that chitta vritti nirodha is in initial stages the restriction of the activities of the mind, that is the controlling. It's not the total stoppage of the activities of the mind in the initial stages. So, in the initial stages, chitta vritti nirodha is the restriction of the activities of the mind. So, to attain that restriction of the activity of the mind, we need this lower vairagya, apara vairagya. And then, to move into the state of cessation of the activity of the mind, total cessation of the activity of the mind, we need paravairagya, the higher vairagya, which helps identify the action of the guna, actions of the gunas, and detachment from that. So, it is only that paravairagya which will propel us into the final stages. It is the one which will propel us in the final stages of attaining kaivalya, moving to a thoughtless state of mind towards kaivalya. So, we have just now seen as to what abhyasa and vairagya is. So, abhyasa, as we have seen, is naishchalyam. So, the ability to retain the mind without getting flustered further. So, that is abhyasa, the action, the effort that is put in towards this. And vairagya, we have seen that it is detachment, is para and apara. So, I fear that we have run out of time discussing the second unit. And the third unit of the first pada is about samadhi and the classification, the twofold classification. The first among the twofold classification of the samadhi. We will further have two more classifications of samadhi. So this is the first among the twofold classification of samadhi, which is directly achieved through abhyasa and vairagya. So we will stop the session here and let me see some of the questions. There is a question: is cessation of activities brought about by staying apart from the objects that trigger such activities? The yoga sutras are very balanced. It says that merely staying away from the objects will not suffice. It is of course an important component, vairagya. Vairagya is an important component, but abhyasa is also essential. So the balance of these only will help. Yes, one more question, comment is there. The best way to do this is by just being a sakshi and observer. Yes, becoming a sakshi and becoming an observer of the activities of the mind, becoming mindful is of course possible, but to a refined mind. Does Agama include Shabda Bodha? The yoga literature, as far as I have seen, does not. Yes, it of course discusses about Shabda, Artha and Jnana. It discusses the relationship between the word, the knowledge and the corresponding object. Discussions of this is found in the Yoga Sutra, but the purpose of this is not, it is not an epistemological discussion, as yoga is very practical and very focused about the goal that is to be achieved. Hence Shabda Bodha, or the relationship between the word, the meaning and the object that it indicates, is focused more on meditation. So in some types of meditation, Savitarka Samadhi is a samadhi where Shabda, Artha and Jnana are all mixed together, and Nirvitarka Samadhi is a samadhi where one has a clear knowledge of what the object is, what the word is and what the meaning is, the separation, a clarity about all these three, or a distinct knowledge about these three are there and only the object is focused upon. So the discussion of course is there in Yoga Sutra about word and its meaning, but the purpose of the discussion is to help, is to guide the mind. The word and the meaning are considered distortions. For Savitarka Samadhi, object, word and the meaning, all these three are required. For Nirvitarka Samadhi, only the object is required, and a person is expected to transcend the word and the meaning. So it is with that purpose the discussion between the word and meaning, or the discussion on word and meaning happens in the Yoga Sutra. the word kalpa, isn't that used in other systems to mean same or similar as vikalpa? It might have been used, but as far as my observation goes, it is yoga which has used the term vikalpa to indicate imagination. Are the pramanas of yoga the same as those accepted by Sankhya? True. Yes, both yoga and Sankhya accept only three pramanas: pratyaksha, anumana and agama. Okay, I mentioned a couple of Bhagavad Gita verses on Abhyasa and Vairagya. Yeah, I just don't recollect it right away. I will give it at the beginning of the next class. There are few more questions. I will note down all these and then I will answer the remaining questions at the beginning of the next class, because we are already running out of time. I see a raised hand from Saroja Shivakumar. Yes, madam. I have unmuted you. Saroja, madam, kindly speak. You have raised a hand. Do you have a question? Okay. So as I mentioned, there are a few more questions. As we have run out of time, I will note those and answer in the next class. We end the class with the shloka: yogena chittasya padena vacham malam sharirasya cha vaidyakena yopakarottam pravaram muninam patanjalim pranjaliranatosmi. Dhanyavadaha. Namaskaram.